I brought my purse up here for this reason. My husband told me that he looked, my husband told me that he listened to my tape. I said, you listened to my tape getting ready for up here? What in the world for? He said, well, I couldn't find my own tape. So I said, well, I didn't listen to your tape, you know. But anyway, he said, there's one thing, I don't know what word he used, but he said, there's one thing that aggravates me about something like that on your tape. I said, what? He said, you get up there and you never know what time it is. You know, he said, you kind of get blind to the time. And so that's true. I get up here and I can't see this little watch. My eyes are getting worse. So I am going to look today what time it is and try to not say that so much in my talk. My name is Gail Williams, and I'm a member of Al-Anon. Hi, everybody. I told my husband this morning, you know, I hadn't even been out of the room yet, but I've been awake since 4:30. I forgot to take my hormones yesterday. And God and I just laid around in the bed and wrestled and talked, you know. And so I've been over this talk a lot. And I have two tapes that I've ever talked. You know, I've talked more than that, but I just have two tapes where I did talk. I've listened to those two tapes. I've listened to, what's his name, Wanda? Anthony Hopkins. And I've listened to Lois, one of our co-founder. Sweet Lois, Lord. And my story is nothing like Lois's story. She was a wonderful lady, you know, wonderful. In the end, she was the breadwinner. You know, he was not even working. And, you know, I love AA. I love it. Because AA was formed 13 years before Al-Anon. 13 years before Al-Anon. And I know the alcoholics, I'm sort of like Hazel Davis, for any of you that know Hazel. And they tell me in the fellowship I can use these names sometimes. I hope that's right. But anyway, Hazel, I got up this morning, I told my husband, I said, I doubt that I'll be able to talk until I'm real old. And he said, why? You're already middle-aged, you know. And I said, because it shoots up my blood pressure. That's what Hazel always says, you know. So listen, you don't know how bad that we need to be here this weekend. So I know that our higher power, which I choose to call God, knows that we need to be here, that we need it, you know, whether y'all need us or not, that we, my husband and I, need to be here, that we grew up in Al-Anon in Memphis. And we grew up with, and I have probably about 9 years more than my husband has in a program, in the program. And we knew each other, you know, in the program. But I was married to someone else, and he was married to someone else. And, you know, I was working a good program, so I wasn't thinking about any hanky-panky or anything. I'd done all that before I ever got to the program. And I was wanting to work a good program, you know. And so I'm going to stop and tell you just one or two things about us, because when I get into my story, when I talk about the alcoholism that I lived in, it won't be with him. You know, I didn't marry Earl. I've never seen Earl until he was drunk. I mean, until he was sober. Help. I've never seen Earl when he was drunk. But you know what? I know Earl. And God gave Earl to me in my life because, you see, I never saw that man that I lived with sober. He died at 52 years of age, drinking. And by that time, we were not together, you know. And so Earl and I are about the same age, but I'll tell you the truth. I was born in July, and he was born in September, so I'm a little bit older than him. It was in the newspaper that way, and I blacked it out before I put it in the album. You know, I said, oh, I'm older than you. So anyway, I thought Earl was too short when I never dreamed of ever marrying Earl because I thought he was too short. You know, aren't you glad I've grown through Al-Anon to know that it's okay to be married to somebody that short? Thank God for my sponsor kept saying, you know, you're kind of cute and you're going to marry again. Don't you think you could try to be a little mature and pick out somebody that, you know, you might can get along with? Well, you know, I didn't know if I could or I couldn't, you know, because I was really immature when I got here. But one more thing about Earl, and then I'll get back into my story. And I have to go back about 1973 is when I came into the fellowship. And I always hated that because Bill Wilson died in 1971, and I always wished that I had have got to meet Bill. You know, because I did get to meet Lois, and she's a wonderful lady, you know, and she lived into her 90s. But when I was elected the delegate, Joanne, if y'all know Joanne and Milton, has Milton showed up yet? I mean, he invited every one of us up here, and he's not here. I'll never forgive Milton for that, except I have to. Milton, Lord God, he's been in and out of my life. When I was in my worst alcoholism in the hospital all by myself, I would be in such bad shape, and my husband would be in the hospital, and I'd look up, and here'd come Milton and Joanne sit all night with me at the hospital. I'll never, ever forget what they've done for me. Sometimes I'd go out of town with Joanne, and I'd be in such bad shape, I'd have no money. And here I am going on a trip with Joanne. Joanne didn't blink an eyelash. She'd say, well, honey, I'll pay your way, and when we get back, you can write a check. You know, she never didn't upset her a bit, you know. Thank God she's got a little money. But I don't know what had happened if I'd have been with a poor person. But I was going to tell you one other thing about Earl, and we've had a lot of fun, you know, and right now we're going through some things, but Mickey, you know, I've sat through a lot of retreats with Mickey, and lots of times when I've done this, all of us will talk, there may be 20 girls there, and I've heard Mickey tell things in her life, you know, even with this long time association with our program. You know, I've heard them share with me about their lives and things and what they've gone through and that it was okay even though we had been in a long time. Because, see, I always thought we'd be perfect and that I would have come today and I'd have been able to heal y'all. And you would have risen right up, you know, and we'd all be well together. But it doesn't work like that. We have to stay here with our imperfections and walk around, you know. But when I was elected delegate, Joanne said, call him. I said, oh, no, I'll just tell him when I get home, you know. No, you call him. So I don't know if they had some agreement or what. But I called him, you know, and you can see how sick people in this type of service work are, how sick we are in service work, because when I called him, I said, well, he said, well, what happened? Who was elected the delegate? I said, well, I was after about 3 or 4 votes, you know, after they did it 3 or 4 times. And I said, it's like being queen for a day. It was just going through my mind, you know, they were so excited, and I'd never had anybody that excited, and they were all jumping around, and I said, this is the weirdest feeling, you know. Thank goodness that it quit being queen for a day. But when I got home, Earl had this big sign welcoming me, and he had welcome or congratulations, delegate. But he had misspelled delegate. I go into the house and I see this sign, and I'm not very happy. And he goes, well, what's the matter and everything? And I said, just exactly what do you mean by that sign? I said, you have congratulations, Delegate. Like, you think I'm going to delegate to these people or something? Instead of he goes, what do you mean? And I go, that word is not spelt right. It's like I'm going to tell them something to do instead of like that I was the delegate. He said, dear Lord, I never even... I meant nothing by that sign, Gail. So you can see in the alcoholism I was brought up in, even today after all these years in the fellowship, I look for an underlying message. You know, I always look for what's the hidden message in that. It's real hard for me to communicate with you because I look for that hidden message. But I'm going to go back now, and I'm going to start in my childhood. Everybody doesn't do that, and it doesn't matter. But the reason I do that was to show you about the disease of alcoholism when my father was not in our house. He was not there. It was my mom. I'm the middle child, and Earl's an only child, so you see why he married me, too. I'm real used to giving to people. You know, I'm a middle child. He's an only child. So I'm the middle child, and it's all girls. No men are in the household. No men whatsoever. And my dad comes in and out of our lives. And Mickey Hawkins probably doesn't know this, but the other day we was talking about her son-in-law, and she probably described my dad a little bit, you know. So you'll have to ask Mickey Hawkins about one of her, is he an ex-son-in-law or about a son-in-law? Because she described my dad a little bit, and I'm at the podium, so I won't tell you all about my dad. But anyway, I tell you that to show you that the disease of alcoholism is a family disease, and my dad was not there. And there was yelling and screaming, and I'm not trying to blame it. You know, I'm just going to share with you about that my dad was not in that household. And so all of us girls had problems from that. We had relationship problems. We had all kind of problems. And thank God I didn't meet Earl a lot younger because I had men problems, you know. I just wanted to boss men around, control them, you know, what I said went. And it took me a long time to think that men had any feelings, any worth, because I had heard all my life what a son of a bitch my father was, how weak-willed he was, so if you say that in your family and that father's not there and he's an alcoholic, I mean, all it did to us was just drive us towards our father. But we grew up like that, and I just tell you that to share about alcoholism. But one thing about me was I was real young, and we were real wild because my mother must have worked two or three jobs, and we were left alone a lot. And I had a beautiful little sister, beautiful. She was the baby. She could dance and sing, and she was blonde and blue eyes, and she was gorgeous. And I never looked like that, you know. And she was an alcoholic, and I didn't know it. And she died at 30-something years old in a car wreck with another girl in the car. They both die in a car wreck. And it's alcoholism related, you know. In her 30s, she dies. And before she dies, she came to our house, and she did get introduced to AA. We gave her a big book, and she got introduced around. But she went home and thought she had to be with the children, you know, needed to be with the children. And anyway, for the next year, she tries to want to quit drinking, and she died in that car wreck, so she didn't have the opportunity to do that. But so there she was, the little child, and I had an older sister who I think's very intelligent. I wished I was half as intelligent as she was. She's always going to school, always being something, always doing something else. She's a nurse, and she lives in Clearwater. I saw her smoke one time, and I just started smoking just like that when I saw her smoking. And so all of us, when we got older, sat down and talked about our family, and all of us saw it different. They said that my oldest sister would, listen to Mom, and then she'd just go off and do what she wanted to do. They said I would have argued with a stop sign. Oh, you know, lucky me. But then my little sister wasn't like that. So I was going to the movies one night. We used to live behind the Bellevue Drive-In, any of those of you that ever lived in Memphis. And I was real young, and I was walking to the movies or something, the drive-in movies, and some boy drug me in the bushes. And I beat the teetotal Hades out of him. I beat him. Because, you see, I was a tomboy. He didn't know it. And I was little, and I was wiry, you know. And I beat the daylights out of that kid. And when I got through, he's standing there, and he's crying. He's lost his wallet. Now, I help him look for his wallet. Sparky, don't you ever tell that. Now, that ought to tell you something about me, you know. I find his wallet and I give it to him, you know. So from then on, I'm taking care of people, I guess. Anyway, that's a little bit about me. At an early age, you know, Earl tells me, we do a lot of honest talking a lot of times. Sometimes we don't talk, but a lot of times we do a lot of honest talking. Kevin was talking about that, and I always appreciate honest talking, communication. And, Lord, I just lost my train of thought. But anyway, and my father used to come in and out of our lives. He would drive a convertible. I thought he was so handsome. He'd been married about 5 times. He never had any other children that I knew of. And he was a hairdresser, you know, and he's a little guy, sort of like Earl. But my dad was a little bit taller than Earl, but... Anyway, what I was going to tell you about my dad, because that other thought just went through right out of my head, but my dad used to come, you know, and be at our house, and they would be drunk, but they were still young and good-looking and stuff, and he might have a buddy with him or something, and they'd be out in the backyard, and they'd be drinking, and beer or whatever, you know, and my little sister and I, they'd be in their swimsuits, and they would get drunk or whatever you drunks do, and they'd pass out, you know, or go to sleep or whatever you call it. And we'd go in the house and we'd get these little pans of soapy water, and we would get razor blades, and we would go outside and they would be just out of it, and we would shave their legs and we would shave their arms, we would shave their faces. And we just shaved them all over. And we would have little nicks all over them, you know. So we would put toilet paper all over them. They would come to or wake up, and they were like wild bunnies out of the jungle, you know. And they chased us. I mean, they would take out chasing us, and they'd want to know where their beer was. And they'd jerk us up eventually when they'd had enough of us. We were just young kids. And they would shake us, you know, where is our beer? And finally we'd say, in the oven, it's in the oven. Of course, we hadn't turned on the oven. But anyway, things like that. I know what I was going to tell you, that thought. I tell Earl often that I have the isms, like alcoholism, that how selfish I am, how I'm this, how I'm that. And, of course, he says, you're nothing like an alcoholic. But, you see, Earl never could get on my inside, so sometimes I don't always agree with what he says, you know. But I always I had not grown spiritually. I had not grown physically. You know, I didn't have those things sticking out in the front and everything like I thought you were supposed to. And I had not grown mentally and emotionally. You know, I had not grown. And I just sort of lived in myself, inside myself. So I always thought I was ripe. There's a page in our Al-Anon book that says, immaturity calling to immaturity. You know, I was just ripe for alcoholism, I suppose. I called it love. But anyway, and, you know, when I talk and everything, we're here to identify, not to compare or anything. And so if you don't identify with me and my story, you'll find somebody, if you stay in our fellowship long enough, to identify with, you know. Just don't try to compare yourselves to me. And I never set out to be married as many times as I was. I thought that was disgusting, you know. Only through the program have I been able to accept You know, that's what I did, and that's my life, and that's all I can share with you is my life. You know, Kevin's been married one time. That's wonderful, you know. He's a young guy. But anyway, Glenn, we won't even talk about you. 55 times. Sparky, get back there. Oh, Lord. Earl and I have that in common, you know. I'm his fourth wife, and he's my fourth husband. That's terrible, isn't it? But through the program, I'm able to accept that. I married my first husband, the love of my life. You know, I'm young, and he's the love of my life, and I almost never, ever give him up. It almost kills me, you know. And I marry him twice. Isn't that normal? I thought it was normal where I'd come from, you know. Anyway, we're very young. I'm 16 years old. We get married. He's going on 19. And any of you that have ever lived in alcoholism know what I'm talking about, know what it's like, you know. And so we always, Al-Anons, or I do, marry people that don't like to dance. But I love to dance. But I always pick them out that don't like to dance. So I marry somebody, and I hear them say in his family, he's the exact opposite of my family. His mom and dad had been married forever. They had six boys. And so I thought he was perfect, and I was flawed. You know, I always thought if I could have been better looking, if I had finished college, if I had done this, if I had done that, then I could make our marriage work, because I was always trying to make it work, you know. I'd heard the stories about him wrecking cars and all that stuff, but I just didn't put it together. I thought drinking was fun. Now, I did not drink. At work, there's a girl, and I've been talking to her, and she's in the second marriage in the middle of the worst alcoholism there is, but they called her Miss Starch. They call her Miss Starch. They call another girl at work Boardsville. And they called me, during my growing up years, Miss Goody Two Shoes. Now, that seems weird if the people that know me today. But the people that call me that were drinkers. And they would start drinking, and I'd want to go home. You know, drop me off at home. When my two sisters started drinking, I say, take me home. Oh, Miss Goody Two Shoes, you're not going, you know. They just wouldn't want to drop me off, you know. But after Al-Anon, I learned how to get them to drop me off. I'd take my own car, you know. I'm going home. But anyway, we're married, and Lord, I always wished he'd have made it to the program. Because, I don't know if he'd have really remembered, but half the time he was the father and I was the mother. You know, he'd beat me with a hairbrush, you know, if I didn't do right or something, turn me over his knee and whip me. And from the very beginning, my sponsor says she had 10 good years of married life. We did not. You know, from the very beginning, we were immature children, very young, getting married. And his drinking could have been, you know, Earl started at 11, so this person could have had that drinking problem a long time. I'm crying one day. He said, could you go in the other room and shut the door and cry? I said, who is this person? Is he crazy? This is not like the movies, you know. This is not like TV. And that's the way I thought that marriage would be, like on the TV, Ozzie and Harriet or somebody. And I don't know if I even did that, but he paid for that, I'm sure, in the next many years of our married life. We were only married a little while, and one time we got mad, and I was going to leave or something. We had no furniture. All the furniture we had, someone had given it to us, our families, and I was going to leave, and he goes, well, if you leave, don't come back. And I said, don't worry, I won't. And so we dated the whole time that we were that I was filing for divorce and everything. We dated. We never stopped dating, you know. We just dated. He always said I was a wonderful girl, and he wished he could just put me in an apartment and live with me, you know. But I never would accept that. I always had to have him, be married to him, you know. And so, Lord, that goes on for years and years and years, and I get sicker and sicker. He leaves me lots of times. I leave him lots of times. My sponsor said she never did that. She's never left her husband. She's been married now like Mickey and Jim, you know, probably 55 years or something. And that's wonderful, you know. She married a deacon in the church who didn't drink, but he started drinking. So, anyway, we went on like that until he's in his 30s, you know. And he left one time, and he goes to the Bahamas. And he left on, you remember those little yellow envelopes when you used to get paid and they stuff your money in the yellow envelopes? He left on that envelope, my paycheck. He did not leave a dime, one little silver dime in there. He didn't leave a dollar bill. And he left, and he wrote on the back of there how much he loved me. And I thought, and I had a resentment at his mom because he called his mother before he left town. I always thought he should have called me. No telling what I would have acted like if he'd have called me. But I had the worst resentment for years because he called his mother that he was leaving town instead of calling me. Now, isn't that sick? But anyway, he leaves. He goes to the Bahamas. So I've never been to the Bahamas. Is there any Bohemians here or anything? And he stays so many months and comes back, and we go back and forth, our whole life, until I'm sick of it. I hate to tell anybody anymore that we've done that. You're just almost like you want to throw up. You're so sick of this kind of a relationship. You know that you're living in a crazy relationship. You love and hate him. I hated him so bad. And I would, and it's so close to love. Love and hate are so close together. I never got indifferent to him. I just loved and hated him so bad. I didn't know that was keeping me tied all those years, you know. And so, but I'll be forever grateful to him because he called AA one day in his life, after all these years, you know, and we're in our 30s, and I had no idea what we were living in, he calls AA. After, you know, no telling how many, I don't even know if I'd ever, I had never heard of Al-Anon, I'd never heard of AA. I just always heard what my dad was, you know. He calls, and he said, he asked him, was he an alcoholic, and they said they couldn't tell him, you know, that he would have to just come to a meeting and decide for himself. And back then, I was still real sick, and I said, well, should I go with you? Can I help you and go with you? And he goes, I don't know if you can go or not, but I'll call them back and see if they, what they say. So he, you know, called them back. And we do go to a meeting, and it's in Memphis, and I never have remembered the meeting that we went to, and it's not important, but Earl and I sometimes talk about the name of that meeting, because you don't do this, do you? We go in, not one living soul says a word to us, not one living soul. Now, that's never happened to me again since being in the fellowship, so I don't know why that happened. It was a film being shown, and they were sitting in seats like this. And in the back, there was dessert and everything. And they were showing that film, Chalk Talk. Chalk Talk. And I was still probably pretty obsessed with him. And so when they showed the film, they showed something about five addictions. And they showed about someone that consumed a lot. Well, Lord, I knew he consumed a lot. You know, so I immediately related it to him, not to me. And that's probably about the only thing I got out of that film, except this higher power is working in my life, and he had called AA. He says he didn't drink for 2 weeks and that I didn't appreciate it and that I didn't even notice that he wasn't drinking. And so he was just going to drink again. Everybody he knew drank, and by gosh, he was going to drink too. And so I was just hopeless and helpless by then. And I was in a little store, something like Walgreens or something, or Kmart, and I saw a book, and it said, Joe's mother drinks too much, or something like that. And so I picked it up and I was going to read it. And I tried everything the book said on my husband. And it would kind of work. I was kind of doing the opposite of what I'd ever done. And it seemed like he would do opposite, you know. And then the book ran out. So I thought, well, I didn't think about reading the book again and starting all over again. But in the back of that book came, you know, it's God. It tells about Al-Anon. In the back of that book, it said that relatives and friends of people that have a drinking problem can go to this thing called Al-Anon. I had never in my life ever heard that word back then. And so I make my call to Al-Anon. And a lady named Catherine G., she's dead now, Catherine Garner, took my call. And she didn't come and take me to a meeting. She didn't go to the same meeting I went to, but I'll be forever grateful to Catherine. And when Catherine was dying, I went to the hospital to see Catherine and everything. But she did talk to me, and I don't know what great things Catherine said to me, but I do know she said, and this took years for me to remember this. I knew that she asked me, did I have a car and did I have a way to get to the meeting? I know she asked those things. But just to even have the courage to go to a meeting is something, you know, to get that back then, to get in that bad of shape to go. But she said that I'll have a good friend there to be with you. You know, well, I didn't get that message then, you know. It took me years to hear that message. But I just felt like, well, she sent me to this meeting, and this whole meeting was for me, you know, like they just took me on as a group, you know. I never knew for years that she really had sent me to Sue B. And so I didn't know that for years. It just took me years to recognize what she was doing. But anyway, I'm going to tell you something about Catherine. A year later, I'm in Al-Anon, and a year later, I've never met Catherine. And I'm in a business meeting, and we're having a convention in Memphis, and they're asking for somebody to be registration chairman, and nobody's volunteering or anything. And so I raised my hand and I said that I would volunteer, and they said they would have to take a vote on it. And Catherine punched me. I didn't know it was Catherine. She said, have you ever heard of such sick folks? And I said, no. And so Catherine and I, she said, didn't you just volunteer? And I said, yes, ma'am. And she said, well, aren't they fixing to take a vote? I said, sounds like it. And so they took a vote. And anyway, I found out she was Catherine G. So we started talking, and she thought that was so neat that I was still in the fellowship, that it had been a year since I had talked to her, you know. And so when I went to my first meeting, I went to a group called Airport Group. Back then, we didn't have a lot of men in Al-Anon. Today, they have a lot of men in Al-Anon. And so they had no men. They had three long tables, nothing but women. And they said to me, go in the back of this door at this church and don't go to the first room, the nicest room, because that belongs to the alcoholics. They really didn't say those words, but today I have the message. They said, now, honey, you go on down the hall, and it'll be the next door from the alcoholics, or the next door. Well, my idea of an alcoholic was in the gutter. He had no shoes on. He was one shoe on, one shoe off, no teeth. Had this little square of the way he looked, and it sure wasn't my father, who was handsome, I thought. He was still handsomely drinking at that time. And they'd have an old belt on, and so I thought, I don't want to see the alcoholics. So I just ran as fast as I could past that door. And so for years, at meetings and things, I would stand up and I'd say, my name's Gail, and I'm not an alcoholic. I'm in Al-Anon. I didn't want them to think I was the alcoholic. But anyway, they probably didn't give a hoot, you know. But I was in this room, and it was nothing but women. And I was a talker. You either come in talking or you come in real quiet, you know, and you just You're so glad that eventually that person that's not talking, whether it takes a year or 2 years, that they start talking. And you're so grateful that you can accept that you're a talker and that you can talk less after so many years, you know. And that you don't have to be ashamed of being a talker, you know. And so at that time, I was going to church counseling, and then I had added Al-Anon. And so I had been going to church, and if I cried, you know, about church, and the minister said, he said, "You're the only person I've ever seen that needed God as much as you do." I guess I was in bad shape, because I would just weep and cry in the church. You know, I just couldn't go in. And so I had started back to church, though, and so this is God, too. And I went down every time they had an invitation. I just kept going down and down and down and down and down. And we'd go Sunday night, Wednesday, I'd go down, you know. And the minister, our brother Dave finally said, "Can I see you in my study?" Said, "Yes, sir, what's the problem here?" He said, "Look, it's either taken or it has not taken. Don't go down that aisle again. You're embarrassing me." So I had to quit going down the aisle. But he did tell me something about himself. He was a minister, and he shared this with me, Brother Dave did. He said he could not help alcoholics, and he could not help women that had ever had abortions, you know. And later I found out the reason that he felt like that was that his father was an alcoholic. You know, I guess he just didn't think he could help them. And he shared some, I don't want to call it a sin, but he shared something with me that he had a problem with, you know, and that was he liked to look at dirty magazines or something, you know. So I thought that was real neat, though, that he had shared that with me. I don't know why. I mean, there was this minister sharing that with me, so I thought that that was neat. But one time they're singing in church, "Count Your Blessings One by One." And I'd been going a long time. Well, we stood up to sing that song, and I thought, I don't have any blessings, you know, to myself. And they sing, and they sing, and I just was weeping inside that I had no blessings. I went out that door, and I'd never been back to church, you know. And I just, you know, when I was in counseling, I only went 9 months, and I asked for a woman, and they gave me a man, you know. I said, "I don't want a man." I said, "What I need to say to a woman. I don't need to say it to a man, you know." So I only went 9 months to him, but he had also been a minister, you know, years ago. And so it was very interesting. A lot of times we did talk about a higher power and things, and he said, "You know, it's very unusual to be a counselor and be able to talk about a higher power." But I only went like 9 months to him, and so then I just got out of everything, and I thought, good gosh, in Al-Anon, it's free, you know. And so maybe I can get well here in Al-Anon. And so I started on this journey of, you know, wanting to get well. And I wanted it so bad. And I was so nervous when I got there. They thought I was on drugs, but I wasn't. But they gave me a nickname, and they called me Flighty because I went around like this. And now they tell me, the people that I know when I first came in, tell me that they tried to avoid me, you know. I never even knew that. They'd say, "Here she comes." But I did not know that, you know, because I just thought they loved me so much. And they made me their treasury. Lord, I thought that was wonderful. Because, you see, at home, I was still arguing and fussing with my husband about money. And they said, "We're going to make you be the treasurer," you know, and I thought that was wonderful. And then every once in a while when I was broke, I'd spend their money, you know, and then I'd be real honest and pay them back, you know, and I just thought, this is wonderful. And they just put me immediately in service work, you know, and Sue B. had been maybe alternate delegate at one time in her life. She'd been all the way up the ladder, and they just always kept me in service work. And I've always been in that until the last few years in my life. And my husband told me one day, and this was kind of true, we were kind of maybe going through a little hard time or something, and he goes, you know, your whole Al-Anon life has probably been built on a lot of service work, you know, and you just don't have that in your life, and you probably need to get busy and work out a little different program here or something. But it was kind of like a little light bulb going on in my head that was kind of true and stuff, you know. There were people in there, and lots of women in there, and they made, and there's, in that group now, all the alcoholics that I met are dead. Some of them died sober. They're back out there. Some of them may be okay out there, but some of them are drinking out there and have never made it back, you know. They made me the chairman of their, I mean, not chairman, like a chairperson. And they, back then, they would make you be chairperson for a month, you know. They and they would say, now, whatever you need to be learning, then you go home and you read about it and you come back and you'll be the chairman for a month, you know. And so I went through all that and everything. Well, my husband became violent. During that time, my husband, I'd been in probably 3 years, 4 years, I'm not sure about the time, and my husband became violent. And so if I had not had Al-Anon, there's no telling what we would have lived through. But I did have that. And so lots of times I would leave our home, and I would have no money, be in a gown, and nowhere to go but to AA's and Al-Anon. And they took me in. You know, I would knock on their door, they would bring me a robe, and they would take me in their home. You know, I had nowhere to go but to them. And so I did that for a long time, and then eventually that was unacceptable to me. And I knew enough about Al-Anon then to know that if I was leaving to make him sober, that, you know, that would not necessarily work, and that I knew I was miserable with him lots of times. I knew I was miserable without him. And I knew in order to get well that you know, that I could leave and still be miserable, or I could leave and try to get well, you know. So I did leave. Well, my husband never, you know, I told you we'd been back and forth for years and years, so it took a year for to make a believer of my husband out of that, you know. And eventually my husband does go off, and I told you that he dies. And he died while I was married to Earl, while I'm married to Earl. And so I said to Earl, you know, when I found out that he was dying, I said, Earl, I would like to go to the funeral, you know. And he said, well, fine, you know. And so he called me back, and he said, I don't believe I'm going to go with you. I'm just going to let you go. And so we hung up and everything, and I called him back, and I said, you know what? I really want you to go to this funeral with me. I don't want to go by myself. I need your support and everything, and I'd rather that you went too. And so he just said, are you sure, blah, blah, and all this stuff. So we did go to his funeral. You know, he did die of alcoholism. He had remarried, and he had a boy, and I've never had any children. In high school, I had it planned that I wanted four boys, and I had their names picked out. And I've married those many times that I've told you about, and I could have married somebody with children, but I didn't have enough sense to do that. So when Earl talks about the water in the apartment, I keep marrying, and I say I love children, but I never marry anybody with children, you know. And so I'm out in an apartment. I've never been out by myself. And I really, Al-Anon has really made me aware of my husband, like aware of that it's not all his fault, you know, aware of that he's not drinking at me, aware that he has something, aware that when he would start fussing and arguing and cussing and stuff, that he would start on me, but in the end, he was talking about himself. You know, so Al-Anon had given me compassion and understanding about that, about his disease. I'm living in this apartment, and I have this terrible feeling one day, and I thought, dear God, I expected this man to fill the spiritual void that I had. See, that was so deeply buried it was inside of me, pushed down so far that I expected that he was capable of filling the spiritual void in me. And what that showed me was how much I had put on that man, how much stuff I had put on him and expected him to do. And so that helped me. And before he ever remarried or anything, I often tried to carry books by there, and I often tried to get him interested in the program, but he never did go to the program very much that I know of. You know, I think Joanne and Milton them said he came once or twice to their group while we were getting a divorce or something. But anyway, I get lonely in this apartment. I've been over there I don't even know how long, and I marry again. I start going with this guy, and my sponsor tells it like this. It's so simple and to the point. She says that I couldn't get over Jacob, so I just get married, you know. And so that sounds crazy, but she puts it, I say, oh, no, it's a lot more to it than that. let me tell you about it. But anyway, I don't even want to go out with this person, but have you ever had somebody just be persistent on you? But they tell me now, and I did not know this at the time, that he moved into the apartment building that I was living in, and he moved in with his brother, and he was not going to leave until he got to go out with me. So see, they tried continuously for me to go out with him, and I didn't know it. And the first time that they ever tried me to get me to go out with him, they said, well, you don't have to marry him, you know, just go out with him. I said, well, just bring him by here. Let me look at him, and then I'll tell you if isn't that awful? And I'll tell you if I want to or not. And we're at the swimming pool or something, and they drive him by there. And I just shook my, you know, after we talked or something, I went, no, I didn't want to go out with him. So they keep on. Eventually, I go out with him. And so we stay up all night talking on the apartment stairway, and so, you know, Al-Anons are probably suckers for attention and talking, you know. And so he, one time during our relationship, I do tell him that I would wish that he would leave me alone and give me some space, that I need some time just to be away from him and to think. Well, anyway, he does, and he's very persistent. He's a counselor, and he's got 1 year of sobriety, and that doesn't ring a bell with me. See, I thought sober forever. He'll be sober forever. I didn't know 1 year of sobriety from any other kind of sobriety. So we do get married. Right before we get married, I have this insight. I didn't want to be single in the fellowship. Well, what does that mean? There's so many men in the fellowship, and I don't want to be single, or what was the problem, you know? And I didn't want, and I had that insight, but I just went right ahead and got married, you know. And 3 months after we're married, he drinks, he stabs himself, and I can't talk. And I call a friend that was in Al-Anon, in that first group that I went to, and I said, please come, I need help, and don't bring the children. I said, I'm in bad shape. And so I hang up the phone, and he's all bloody and drug himself all over the living room and kitchen, and he has put the knife back in the drawer. And he has. And so the police come, and at that, I thought the police were so neat that day because they didn't accuse me of killing him. And they took the knife out in a sack. I thought that was so nice of them, taking that knife out in a sack, instead of just go outside waving the knife. But you see, I go into some kind of, I know y'all have blackouts, I don't know what I went into, but I can't talk. I go, So for 3 days I talk like that. I can't talk. And my friend comes, who was in Al-Anon, and that's the same friend that I used to go to their house, and they let me in and sleep on the sofa while my husband was being violent. And he had had 4 or 5 years sobriety, Phil. Sparky and them probably know him, Phil D. And he goes back to drinking, and he dies of alcoholism at 43 years of age. So you don't think this is cunning, baffling, and powerful? and I had spent many a night in their home. But we go to the hospital, and Mary goes with me, and we sleep on a cot together. Mary's down at one end, I'm down at the other end, and Mary reads to me, and I believe that she reads out of the Bible, I'm not sure, but for 3 days I can't talk, and I make those little animal sounds, because you see, I wanted to be well, and I wanted to help you. I didn't want to have to be helped. I wanted to be well. I had already been in. I didn't want him drunk. I wanted to be well. I wanted to be doing great works for other people. I didn't want people to be helping me, but I didn't know all that. And so after 3 days, we're standing in the room and we're talking to the alcoholic, and he goes, well, I ate some candy, and it turned into alcohol. I went, what did you say? And I thought, candy, sugar, alcohol. It does, maybe it could turn into alcohol. Look, I thought, God, dear Lord, am I going to believe this? You know, about that time the doctor comes in and calls us out of the room and he goes, we're not going for this, you know. So I'm on the worst alcohol. I come out of this marriage and I remarry after so many years, and I'm in the worst alcoholism that I've ever been in. And I say, I had said I would never, ever live in alcoholism again. And so I think about a divorce. I think, well, God, that great love of my life, I've gotten out of that. I'm going to stay in this. But you see, I was in Al-Anon. I had a program, and I thought a marriage should work because I had that program. I had those 12 steps, and I was bound and determined that marriage was going to work. He had spent some of my money while he was drunk, so before I'd let him back in the house, I told him he had to pay that money back. Somewhere he went and got that money, and he did, and then we're on a journey of the next years. He's a counselor, so I'm real leery of counselors. If you're a counselor, don't even tell me. Hell, they die with alcoholism. He has the knowledge. He has so much knowledge, and I want it. See, I wanted what he had. I wanted him to get me. I wasn't a drunk, but I wanted him to help me. And so lots of times we were living in an upstairs apartment, and I would call him down at night. You get down here. I'd just be cussing him out. You help me. I need help. You know, I wanted him to make me well. I always wanted God to make me well, come down out of the sky and make me well. I wanted a man to make me well. I wanted my sponsor to make me well. I always wanted somebody, God, to do a burning bush because I knew he could do it. I wanted him to make me well real simple like that. I did not want to have to do the darn work, you know. And so nobody's ever, you know. I got so spiritual, about floated out of the top. I just got so spiritual, I wasn't going to be able to live here. You know, I was just saying, well, God, I can't stand it. Take me home. I'm spiritual now. Get me up there. I couldn't stand it. I could hear all this noise. I could hear all y'all, and y'all were sick people. And I was just praying to go home, you know. And so when I hit flat again about spirituality, you know, I hit hard. And I don't think that God moved, but undoubtedly I moved, you know. And so I had a hard time. I had to read a lot of books. I had to go to a lot of meetings. I had to listen to a lot of tapes. And I had to start all over again gradually. Because, you see, I would go to this parking space and I'd have a big car, but it'd be a little bitty parking space, and I'd say, God, get me in that parking space. I know you can do it. You know, get me in there, and it'd be a big car. And the more he would do, the more I would want God to do, you know, till I just got so spiritual, I just about floated out of the top. And I read a lot of, is Arlene here? I read a lot of, you know, Arlene calls herself a big book, Al-Anon or something. And so that's true of me. You know, it worried my sponsor. But back in our day, when we came in, we didn't have the literature that we have today. I love the big book, and I love the 12 and 12 AA has. And I've worked out a lot of problems through the 12 and 12 and through the big book. It helped me to understand the little that I understand about alcoholism. That marriage made a believer out of me. If I was not, I don't believe I was completely believed that alcoholism was a disease. But that marriage, in the end, that man is drinking. Every time I'm missing my astringent, I never think of him drinking, but when I start, I say, where's my astringent? Well, he's drinking, you know. And Milton always, always relates to that marriage, you know. Milton thinks that, well, Milton knows he was that type of drinker, you know. So that person could not give me a program or anything, but they tried and stuff. And he does die of alcoholism. And he does die, you know, drinking astringent and drinking all that stuff. And then I realized that I'm living on the first three steps. I'm living on the first three steps, scared to take a fourth step. And I was mad at Al-Anons, because in Al-Anon you hear you can take forever to work the steps. And it made me mad. I said, well, they don't do that in AA. They tell them they, by gosh, better work them steps, you know. They better get busy and work them steps. And I got to where I wanted to go over to AA, you know. And I got to thinking, well, you know, I know I don't drink, but I have all that stuff they have, you know. When I'd listen to them in open meetings and stuff, and people were laughing, you know, about that, laughing at talking to me about that. But Joanne and Milton, got to mention his name again, they didn't laugh at that. They took me over to their house, they set me down, and they said, you think that program is superior. Well, I never thought of that, you know. They said, you think, you know, and they talked to me and they said, do you drink, you know? I said, no, not very much sometimes. And Milton said, I've seen too many people go in that program that don't belong in that program, you know. And he goes, unless you have a drinking problem, that's not the program for you, you know. And so I knew I wasn't, didn't drink, but I thought, I kept wanting to go in there, and I thought, well, now when I go in there, they're going to set me down, they're going to question me, and I'm going to have to tell them I don't drink. See, I didn't know what they did in there, you know. So Milton and them got me out of that, and eventually I know I'm going to have to work the steps, you know. You've got to work those steps in order to change this personality that I had. I had to work them. So I had to go from the three steps I was living on and the fellowship. I was living on the fellowship and the first three steps. At work, I would take Al-Anon literature and I'd white out Al-Anon and I would underline what they should do and I would give it to the people that I worked with. You know, I said they were hurrying to work all the time and they needed to slow down, you know, and I'd underline what they should do. But it was so hard to work it in my own life, you know, work it in my own life what I should do. And so I would three-step and then go way down here and try to give it to others, you know, instead of working the steps. Is Bill S. here? And he's going to talk Saturday night. Bill heard one of my first talks I ever made. And I didn't know he'd ever heard it. And my husband, the time I told you that he stabbed himself and got drunk, we were supposed to have split a talk that night, and so my husband, you know, was drunk, so I got in the car with my sponsor at that time. I've only had two sponsors. Her name was Ernestine H., and I got in the car with her, and we drove somewhere. I didn't know where until Bill told me, and we happened to be in Oxford, but I didn't know it, and he tells me this years later, so I guess I'm in a blackout or whatever, and I'm going to talk, you know, because the 12 steps are behind me, everything's behind me, and I look out there and I see all these people and they had an eating meeting and I just keep looking. And so, you know, I don't even know what I said, but I set myself down and my sponsor had to get up and finish the talk. And so I realized what little bit of the program I had. And so I knew I had to start to work. And so I did start to work and do the fourth step. You know, I knew I was going to die if I didn't do the fourth step. At a little bitty kid, I tried to commit suicide at 10 or 11. I had tried everything there was to try to get well. Now I had a name to put it on, but I just wouldn't do the steps, and so I had to get busy. I always wanted to do them perfect. You know, I wanted to do them perfect and then graduate, and then I'd be able to handle everything. Or if he would get sober, we'd live happily ever after. I didn't know we'd have the underlying problems that we'd have to deal on, which I had a lot of my own underlying problems, you know. And so I did take a fourth step in there. I used to sit in meetings, and they said how you could manipulate, and I said, I have never manipulated anybody or anything. I don't know how to manipulate. I thought that they had, and I could listen to them, and they could manipulate, but I said that I couldn't. And so in that fourth step, God revealed that one night I was with my first husband, Jacob. We leave I want him to go home. He will not go. And I get in our car. I drive it real slow down the road, and I run it into a telephone pole. I just kind of run it into this telephone pole, and the police come, and they go back up to the VFW. I tell them where he is, and they go and get him, and we get to go home. And I never, ever, ever remember that again. I push it so far down inside of me, I never, ever remembered it again. So I did manipulate. I could manipulate, you know. So my fourth step brought out all kinds of things about me that I had not known, you know. I love this fellowship. I love AA. I love the history of our fellowship. I keep trying. You know, I'm not perfect. I don't know any of us that are. I think it's wonderful. I look out here, and here's Jim and Mickey, Fran, and them, and they have all these years, Juanita and Bob, and that they're still in our fellowship. They're still here. I see other old that I don't know, long-term time people that I do not know, but I know that they're long-time people listening to Mickey and all them talk. I just, that fills my heart with gratitude that they're still coming, because there's not many of us. And then there's Mike with 6 months with his adorable wife. That's unbelievable. And then there's David. He's down here with his sponsor, and he's got 6 months. And that's what it's all about in our fellowship. It's about somebody being here with some long time so that they can help some of us. And then somebody new being here that we can give a message to where they've given it to us. I thank you, and I love you very much.